everybody. Welcome back to The Therapy Show. This is Therapy Show episode 10. Yeah, two more after this. And we're back. We're here to talk about something therapeutic because that's what we do. As a reminder, 10 episodes in, I don't do this very often, but Wendy's an actual therapist and helps people all the time with actual problems. I'm just a yokel who knows how to turn the knobs and make this thing record itself. Those are our roles. Here we are. We're doing our thing. Wendy, hi. Welcome back.
Hi.
How is it going?
Good.
Is it snowing there yet? Do you have snow in Sweden yet, or do you have to wait for that?
No, and you know what? I hear that we're on the west side of Sweden, the west side, and they don't always get snow. So that's something I'm sad about.
That's weird. You don't always get snow. I just figured the whole country would be just blanketed in it all year long for some reason.
Yeah, we're pretty close to the coast.
Yeah.
And lower down, so it can get snow for sure, but it, you know, some years are bad.
Is it a stereotype? It's a stereotype that Sweden would be covered in snow. I should probably not practice that stereotype,
but I think
not harmful though, is
true.
It oh really?
Yeah, much more so in the past. So.
Well, okay, well, is that, you know, global warming? What are we gonna blame?
We're warming up.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. We actually have a topic today, and today's exciting because we put the word out saying, hey, if any of you, last week said any of you want to submit ideas for our final three episodes in terms of sort of overarching plots, we said, yeah, that'd be great. And you said, sure, why not? And you sent in a bunch of them, and I've got a ton. But this week, we're going to start with one that, once again, I can kind of relate to.
Which is why you pick them.
Is why I picked this one, because this reminds me of when I was a kid, or at least the topic of it does. So we'll read it here, and let's see what we make of it. So here we go. Hi, Scott. I wanted to write in to say how much I enjoy The Therapy Show. At first, I wasn't sure I would like it, but after the first episode, it became one of my favorite podcasts. Thanks for Frog Pants or otherwise. Well, that's very nice. And he also spelled favorite the way the British do, which I can appreciate. I would like to request that you, or if you can, do an episode on confidence and body image, as it is something I have been suffering from since I was a child. Being male, I think it often gets ignored as a subject because of the prevalence of issues like anorexia mainly affecting women. The focus is naturally on them. There is, however, a certain area when it comes to body image that is unique to men, which can cause a lot of distress, and it is so often seen as a joke, which is nonetheless hurtful to those who are on the receiving end. As you can tell by the email, it is still uncomfortable to talk about, and I really think those suffering in silence like myself would benefit from Wendy's expertise on the matter. Thanks again for the brilliant and insightful podcast. All right. Now, I think he's obviously referring to man wieners, right? That's probably what he's talking about.
Man wieners?
Yeah, like a wiener, like his wiener, right?
No.
You don't think so?
No,
well, he said there's a certain area when it comes to male body image that is unique to men, which can cause a lot of distress. And then later says he's still uncomfortable explaining it. I think that's kind of where he's aiming.
Okay, because I was thinking like just being uncomfortable generally because I'm a guy. And okay, yeah, I kind of missed that.
Now, knowing that, we'll make that assumption, all right? Assuming that that's the case.
I am not prepared for that part.
What we'll do here is discuss it in a more general way, because I think that falls in there anyway.
Yeah.
But I know what he means. Like, and this actually can maybe lead into where my problems as a kid were, because it's all about self-perception and usually has nothing to do with reality. So if he was at the, for example, at the gym or something, and, you know, let's say he's in junior high gym class and everybody in gym's got big wieners, but he doesn't, or he thinks he doesn't. Chances are, if you could look back on it with an objective eye, he's just fine. There probably wasn't as big a difference as he thought. Now, I'm not trying to just shuttle away his lifelong, you know, anxiety about this in one fell swoop. What I'm trying to get at is a very recent experience I had, and I'll just explain it real quick, and then you can delve into all the ins and outs of all this stuff.
Right.
When I was a kid, I was convinced that I was the skinniest human being on earth. And I don't know why I believe this. Yeah, I thought I was this skinny little weakling, spaghetti-armed nerd kid. And I thought this, I think, for a few reasons. One, I just felt like in comparison to some of my friends and stuff, they seemed kind of muscly and mannish, and I seemed skinny and kind of wasted away looking, caving. You know, I felt like my chest was caved in. I felt like my arms, you could put your hand around them and touch the other, you know, your fingertips by going around my arms.
Right.
And a sign of, you know, male whatever oftentimes is, you know, how buff you are or how broad shouldered you are, or any of those things. Right. And I think I picked it up from a few sources. One was just seeing it, but others were like, my brother Mark teased me a lot about this. He called me Noodle. And people have always just assumed, oh, that's just a silly nickname. No, it's because he was talking about my arms. He described it to me once. So he referred to me as Noodle. Come here, Noodle, he'd say, because he's talking about how skinny I was. Mom would talk about how skinny I was all the time. It was just kind of known that Scott was this beanpole. And as I grew, right. And as I got older, I got taller. And we've talked on the bullying episode about how I didn't ever get picked on once I got taller. So height was a big deal, but I still was so skinny, just stretched out and didn't gain a ton of weight. I ate like a pig, but it didn't matter. My metabolism just burned whatever I threw at it. And here's the funny bit, though. So I felt like that probably all the way up through my mid-20s. Too skinny, all right? Now, mid-20s, I'm already married. Doesn't really matter anymore. I'm not trying to impress anybody.
Doesn't
right?
matter.
No, but I put on some weight, but still felt like I was too skinny. And then there came a point where I looked in the mirror and went, dude, you're fat. You're getting all fat now. Where was the middle ground between the ultra skinny and the fat? So then I happened upon a big box of old photos Mom gave me.
Yeah.
And I'm going through all these photos of me as a kid, and there I am running around outside with a shirt off or whatever at like 11 or 12 years old, probably prime time or when I really was feeling self-conscious about this.
Yeah.
I wasn't that skinny. I was kind of like every other kid. So again, with all the years past and be able to look at it through more objective eyes at a kid who doesn't even look like me anymore. I'm so far removed from that kid that now I can see him for just being a kid. And I'm standing around all these other people who I thought were these big, buff, well-developed guys. And I looked the same in these photos. I didn't look any different than they looked. In fact, there were some kids who in my head, I thought were like the studly dudes. And now in retrospect, seeing these photos, I'm not as skinny as they are. So I'm not saying that he's totally this by any means. But my point is that was shocking for me to see those photos. And to realize that all of that anguish I had about my body type and that it wasn't cool for a guy to be so thin was probably all absolutely garbage. I may have been a little taller and a little more slender than some, but it wasn't anything like I had in my head.
Right.
So explain that.
Well, it's called a body dysmorphia. And it's literally like you have on goggles. That, you know, like the funhouse mirror.
Yeah.
And you just don't see yourself accurately. It's why when you maybe have seen this on the news or TV shows or something where they, you know, there's a woman or man who is so thin and they are pinching skin and saying, look how fat I am.
Yeah.
They literally cannot see what the rest of us see. Right.
Yeah.
And they look grotesque at some point, right? Like they're skeletons and they are convinced that they are enormous. So they really look in the mirror and see something else. That's actual body dysmorphia. But you can see it in embryo that you experienced. And I think all of us do to some extent. Some of this is because of a principle that's kind of annoying, but very real. And that is we think people are paying attention to us when they're not.
Yeah.
And so part of the way we're viewing ourselves is we're afraid of how others are viewing us, and they must all be paying attention to me. And what they're seeing is this super skinny person. Cause you know, they're seeing what you're seeing, which is this over thin, you know, and the rest of them are thinking, oh no, everyone's looking at me and my fat butt or my weird ears or my, you know, so we're all doing it.
And are the looks on, cause sometimes the looks on their face, they have the look on their face of somebody who is looking at you, but really that look of disdain or that look that's hard to determine on their face is actually about themselves. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Or just they have gas. I mean, you don't know.
No, I do not. That I am unaware
of. No, but you interpret that as this is feedback about my pectorals when really they're thinking, I gotta take a dump. Where's the nearest restroom? Right? But you've just absorbed that message and made it your own, made it up, and then sort of fed the machine, right? That was sort of dictating how you felt about yourself physically. So let me ask you this. How often were you looking at images of male bodies and thinking, I don't look like that. I should look like that. Like, how much was exposure to kind of the ideal male body as opposed to just peers?
Well, there definitely wasn't any kind of like, hey, give me a GQ magazine so I can see what the dude should look like. There wasn't any of that going on, but it was like, it felt like it was constant, but probably what it was gym class.
Yeah.
Basketball, where we'd have shirts and skins just for pickup games, because we played a lot of basketball on weekends and things. And I already felt like I was bad at the sport, but this is what all my friends did. So I would go and they'd always go shirts and skins, and people would go shirts, skins, or whatever, and pick. And I worked so hard to never be skins. I hated it because I didn't want to be, I didn't want to be exposed for the noodle that I was.
Right.
And so I fought so hard against it that I think emotionally it felt like it was constant. I don't think I was ever, especially not like today, and I'm not trying to get all old man about this, but I don't feel like TV, which has always exploited attractiveness of women, I don't feel like it was always doing it as much with dudes. I mean, the guys I would have to compare myself to would have been like David Hasselhoff and, who's the mustache guy?
I can never get hair like that.
Right. Who's the one that mom loved? Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, yeah.
Yeah. So those kinds of faces and body types or whatever, those are all I really ever saw. And they were like hairy and weird. And I was like,
super hairy.
So none of that was, I don't feel like that would have been a problem for me as much as it probably is for, and I'm speaking as a dude who doesn't really know this, but if I'm a girl growing up, even in the 80s when I did, and seeing, French cut bikinis and just girls with perfect shapes and all that stuff all the time, I can't imagine. I have to imagine that that's a little bit more in your face than the dude end of it.
Right.
Because I don't want to be any of those people,
We're now seeing such an increase in men. And I'll give you statistics so you can
get a sense of this. Oh, I love statistics. All right.
But like, there is a huge uptick in men experiencing eating disorders, and there's a subtype of body dysmorphia, which is called muscle dysmorphia. Mm. And it is where it's sort of the male bodybuilding thing, that the obsession is that you're not muscular enough and you just cannot, so you've seen people who are like disturbing muscular.
Sure.
And they're still not seeing.
Yeah.
That the muscle the same way. And then you have that trickles down to everyone, someone with no muscle is still viewing themselves as more feminine and less muscular or whatever than they might actually be. So there is actually now a subtype because it's so connected to, I think the rise for men is connected to the increase in what ideal men bodies we see now that we just didn't see before.
Yeah.
So take, the guy who played Bond, who plays Bond now, what's his name?
The new guy, Daniel Craig?
Daniel Craig. He gets out of the ocean, ladies, am I right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
He walks, yeah. He gets out of the ocean and most people that would be some form of underwear, but I guess it's a swimsuit. And he gets out of the ocean and you're like, whoa, like, dang. And so women are seeing that like, whoo, whatever. But men are seeing that and going, okay, that's what I'm supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, Tom Selleck, it was like, it just looked like a bear rug walking around in shorts. There's something qualitatively different about it. And maybe just there's more, I don't know, there's just more of it. There's more of those scenes. There's more reference to it. There's more, we're sort of the most beautiful people. We're not just saying their faces for men. It's them in their underwear. It's Beckham, right? Like, mm-hmm. You have now men to look at to say that's the ideal male body that is shown regularly versus maybe in the past it wasn't shown so much. So I think that's one contributing factor. So we got to define some things and get some numbers on the table here.
All right, I'm down with that.
It's important to
let
sort
the numbers
of distinguish,
paint the picture, as it were.
Paint the picture. That was not the recording. That was me. To distinguish, I couldn't think of the word, distinguish between sort of dieting,
yeah.
And like, oh, I'm got to work out, I'm getting a little flabby or whatever, that versus an eating disorder, right?
Mm. Because I got to say, the skinny thing never affected me, even in the... So what I feel like I had the opposite of somebody who obviously is saying they look fat to themselves or whatever. I had the opposite of that. But I didn't go out of my way to eat like major protein or just pound down 50 burgers at a time or anything like that.
Yes, right.
But you're,
and that
but
it, is but part of this.
But for me, for a guy like me or somebody, guy or girl, who feels like they're too skinny and not up to whatever the middle ground is that often a problem? With this side, not the fat side, but the skinny side, where there's an eating disorder associated with it? Okay.
It actually is not correlated to what people really look like. I mean, there will definitely be maybe an onset for somebody who has gained a lot of weight and then tries to loses it, and then becomes obsessed with exercise, becomes obsessed with what they're eating and what they're not eating. So you can develop an eating disorder and have not really any of the symptoms prior to that, in the sense of, you know, like I've struggled my whole life and I'm still dealing with it at 40. There's not like, it's not super common for people at 40 to go, oh, now I have it. But the most common age is between 14 and 25 is the onset. So you could be your regular going along self, and then at 24, 25, the onset can occur. So it isn't just young kids start and then keep going. That is really common, though, for it to start when you're much younger. There's some really disturbing numbers on kids and how they think about their bodies and their weight. And so anyway, let me just define what eating disorder is real quick.
Yeah, please. And before I forget, just real quick, the idea that kids seem more susceptible to this idea that people are looking at them all the time.
Yeah.
I had this experience over the weekend. Nick had to speak in front of a group of 200 people, a mix of adults and kids. And 5 minutes is all he had to do it for.
How many people?
About 200.
Ew.
Yeah. Okay. So he gets up there and he does it. And he comes and sits down with us when he's done.
Yeah.
And I say to him, I looked next to him and I knew he was relieved because he hates this, right? Just cannot stand it. He's like his mom, just does not like speaking in public. So I put my arm around him. I said, you did awesome. Aren't you relaxed now? He goes, kind of. And he's just looking all shifty and kind of darting his eyes around and just looking real nervous still. And I said, what's the matter? And he goes, nothing. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm glad it's over. I said, do you still feel like everybody's looking at you right now? And he goes, yes, and I don't understand why I feel that way. It's a very interesting little experience I didn't expect to have before we had this conversation. But that, to me, seems to support this idea that if you're a 14 to 16-year-old kid, or maybe a bigger range than that, but it seems like maybe you are way more susceptible to this perception that everybody is staring at you right now.
Right.
And nobody was looking at him. Like, I'm the only one showing him any attention at all.
Yeah, they've all moved on.
Yeah,
right?
If they've thought about him at all, it was, oh, what a nice kid. He did really good up there. That was brave. And that's it. But he doesn't see it that way. He's sure that he is being scrutinized till the minute he leaves the room. So anyway.
Okay.
I just didn't want to forget to mention that.
Well, there's that. And then there is also the messages. I mean, it's so funny that my friends and our mothers, we were young and sort of our teenage years when our mothers were doing weird diets like Fen-Phen. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
And, you were on the, I was out, but you were, it's like early 90s we're talking about here. Late 80s, early 90s.
And so they take Fen-Phen, which is a stimulant of some sort that's addictive and super dangerous. And they took that for a while and everyone lost weight. It was so great. I mean, the hype and the fads and the crap that's always been around, I swear, started then, right?
It was huge.
It was like the Jane Fonda, like, let's work out. That's a good idea. And then let's take a bunch of pills. And so our mother and their little, my friend's moms are younger than mom, but sort of that yo-yo dieting was very much a part of their life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting, my generation and my group of friends, it's all exercise.
Like, yeah.
I don't think any of us have, you know, doing any of the eating disorder typical stuff, but there's always like, hey, we exercise and we're healthy. Like we are on the health bandwagon versus our mothers, which were like, let's just lose weight and get thin bandwagon and health be damned. We will take Fen-Phen.
But there's but what you're getting at, and I think I get what you're getting at, but there's also like an extreme, they've swung real far the other way. Like it's not the PX90 thing, but the other thing that everyone's into right now, CrossFit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Those people are crazy, dude. And I'm not, look, they're in incredible shape, good on them and stuff. But there's this group near us who is always at the park, like running across the park, screaming with a big heavy weight over their head and things like that. And I see them doing this. And the way when they're done, the way that they interact is just so dude bro. And I'm talking about like a bunch of ladies and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very intense cultural
deal. There's some testosterone pumping at that point. For sure. Yeah. I mean, at that point, you're like burning like muscle tissue or something, and it makes you crazy. No, there's always something, and there probably always will be. And it's interesting. I mean, I think of like ancient Greece, right? You have, I mean, the origin of the marathon, and you have, you know, nudity and like worshiping bot. I mean, this has always been a thing in humankind, right? Yeah. It's like we get obsessed, right? So the American version is, and it's sort of like two directions. You've got overdoing it, like exercising themselves to death, and then severe obesity, right? We have like two folks. I mean, there's plenty of people in the middle that are normal, but it's you wouldn't know that from TV or the billboards when you drive down I-15, right? It's a marathon next week and plastic surgery. And then the next one's for a lawyer. And those are your three billboards everywhere you go, right?
Yep.
That says some sad things about us, but okay. So let's get back to the definition. Eating disorder criteria. I'm going to briefly overview it. This is not just, I've gained 5 pounds. I should go work out a little bit. This is you refuse to maintain a healthy body weight for your age and height. And, you know, it must, you actually meet a criteria of 85% less than expected weight.
And whatever that is, right? It's not like this is specific.
Or 85% of, sorry.
Right. Weight. Okay.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
And then there's intense fear of gaining weight or becoming fat, even if you're underweight. So this is anorexia, by the way. The sort of dysmorphia thing kind of plays into there, and you don't see yourself accurately. And then you're very defensive when people are expressing concern. You are in denial that it's serious, you know, you're low weight. In fact, unfortunately, so many people get rewarded for this initially. I actually had a neighbor die of anorexia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just before we moved in. So I didn't know her, but I knew her family and saw the aftermath. Wow. And she had always been heavy, had a couple kids, just never could quite lose it. And then just started running with a neighbor, and it's like it triggered something in the brain. And I think it's important to note that something like 50% of people with any kind of eating disorder have co-occurring depression. Real common to have these connected anyway. And so she had some stuff going on too. Anyway, just got thin, and everyone praised her. And she got so, so thin. And then everyone started to express concern. And, you know, that's a really weird road to be on, to get that praise for the first time in your life. And have everyone make a big deal about you, and you feel great, and then you're getting too thin, and now people are concerned, but you're still getting highs from being so thin and exercising your brains off. We actually had a cousin with anorexia. Do you know that too?
No. Yeah. No, I did know that on dad's side, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of them.
And the highs from exercising are pretty, pretty high. So it becomes addictive and drug-like and all of that. But it puts your heart in a condition that is terrifying. And the mortality rate is probably the highest of most, I think it is actually the highest of any mental illness. Suicide, obviously, you know, takes its toll in various capacities, but actually death from the mental illness created by it is, eating disorders, because you have screwed up your system so intensely. So she had a heart attack at 33.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah. Pretty intense. So there's that. And then this is a perfect example of why a male would email this and say, I feel stupid for having to, you know, it's hard because I have this, or I feel these ways, and it's so under talked about. And part of that is because it's mainly women we've always associated this with. In fact, the official criteria has that you stop menstruating as part of the definition.
Oh, really? Wow. Really?
Yeah. So we need to.
Where did I hear about this? On some documentary I watched called, this is all being real familiar. Oh, it was called Thin. And it was all about, well, it was about this very thing. And one of the topics was a couple of these girls who were only in their, I want to say early 20s, had essentially rendered themselves completely unable to have children. Permanently in one case, I want to say, because it was just whatever the damage is was so bad that she couldn't naturally produce the right hormones anymore or something like that. And I didn't, I mean, until I'd seen that, I didn't realize things could get that intense. I mean, that just seems crazy.
I mean, you're slow starvation. You're eventually going to shut down all your systems. And the stress on your heart, I mean, that's usually what kills them is heart complications or a heart attack. I mean, think about 33 years old and your heart stops. I mean, that's, you have to majorly strain, and it is. And so there's some subtypes here that I think are helpful for people to know. There's a restricting type, and those are people who do not eat, and they don't do the binge eating and the purging. And that's the binge eating purging type. And those will have sort of a combo of anorexia and the bulimia.
Wow.
So bulimia is the other one. And that is, you know, eating in a period of time, usually about 2 hours, where you just eat more than you could ever imagine, that you would never eat normally in that normal amount of time. And then you feel so out of control from eating that much that you feel like you can't stop. So then you use laxatives or throw up or whatever to get rid of the calories, right?
Right.
So there's also health risks to that. Your electrolytes get whacked, you ruin your teeth. I mean, there's so much that happens with that and also stresses the body quite a bit.
Right.
And that, so they can be kind of connected, right?
Yeah. As a kid, I remember thinking I would never be bulimic, but it was for this, because I hate barfing so bad that I could, it's such a stupid kid thing to think now, because there's so much seriousness around it. But at the time I just thought, oh, I could, that'd be terrible. I can't even stand barfing when I get sick. How can I handle, you know, that was the extent of my understanding of it at the time.
Right. And of course, you know, I'm sure people who are, you know, purging are not fans of throwing up. I think they are fans of the feeling. And this is what I've found when I've worked with folks with eating disorders, is there is a sense of power, relief, and a buzz when you throw up.
Mm.
And you and I do not know that experience, because we hate it so badly. It's hard to imagine that there's any endorphins or dopamine that comes from that activity, but it does. And it's more of a sense of control and power. And so something is, I'm finding myself falling into the trap of referring to women, because it is so much more common among women. And really his point in the email is that, hey, we're guys here too. So you steer me if I get too far off, but it tends to be, you know, more known. Women tend to get help more than men get help generally. And then because there's no stigma with gender for women to go get treatment. There's stigma for having a mental illness, but the stigma for men is much bigger, right? Which is, this is a women's disease, and you know, you're obsessed with not eating or restricting or exercising, or you're throwing up, or you know, that is more embarrassing for men, I would, you know. And that's what I'm reading, and this guy's referring to this. So for them to get help, you know, there's more barriers. So then our numbers aren't awesome. Like, we don't know exactly how many men are suffering, but let me give you some general statistics that we think are pretty
sure. I mean, consistent. And reasons why they wouldn't be is, what, it's just men are less likely to admit this. There's more stigma. Like, what's the,
And less likely to get help, but they're being hospitalized. I mean, that we're getting numbers from hospitalizations. So it isn't just, reporting, even though they do that as well. So the kind of going number is that 10% of men have an eating disorder.
Wow.
Which is a lot, right? 1 in 10 is pretty significant. So one thing to note too, that binge eating is also an eating disorder. That it's one thing for us to sort of, and I think we glamorize a little bit that men don't care how they look, like the fat dude in a family sitcoms, like, I look good. You know, we have this sort of that men are beyond, sort of being obsessed with how they look. There's that stereotype. And then there's also kind of the eat a ton. Like, that's a normal thing to be doing, right? Or, hey, get together with friends, we ate 40 pizzas. You know, there's cultural norms around eating a ton of food with a bunch of your friends. But binge eating is, again, this definition of a short period of time where you consume thousands and thousands and thousands of calories. I mean, you are just eating more than is you would think is humanly possible. And for those who have this experience, it is, they'll describe it as just powerless to stop it. They just cannot put enough food in their mouth. And not everyone, you know, purges, but there's still that dynamic. And so a study not too long ago, 2007, out of Harvard, there were 3,000 people that they interviewed with eating disorders. 25% of them were men.
Yeah.
So we have even a higher number.
Wow.
It's a quarter of the people they talked to had an eating disorder, and 40% of them, it was binge eating. So you have, you know, it's on the rise. Almost half of this group is binge eating as the form of, so yeah, it's
I mean, I think there's a lot of gray area, right? So, or at least I think there is. When I there will be times where I just can't stop with something. It's like, man, that, you know, chocolate banana cake is good. Let me just have one more. And it just seems like, oh, isn't that funny? You ate too much. Get back on your diet. But sometimes I'll be like, I honestly don't know if I could stop eating these unless you take these out of my view here. Like,
right.
I've felt like that before.
Right.
So I can only imagine when that's cranked up to 10 and it's super intense and it's how you eat everything all the time. I mean, it's just a taste of it, but I can kind of see how that might be.
Yeah. Well, and I have a sort of running theory that every single mental illness is a common, at its core, is a common experience we've all had at one time or another. It's just then out of control,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So depression, we've all had a bad day. We've all been sad for no reason. We've all felt lethargic. And then it doesn't stop. That's, you know, when it's cranked out of control. Binge eating, there's not one of us who hasn't eaten a whole bag of, let's say, for our British fans, McVitie's digestives. Oh my gosh, I love them. And they sound disgusting. Digestives, like what in the world? But they're these like oatmeal cookies with chocolate. They're super good.
Yeah, they're incredible. They're terribly named, but they're really good.
Yeah. And you eat the whole box and you don't even think twice about it, right?
Yeah.
Until after, and then you're like, oh,
what did I do?
Of shame, yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. So we all experience so much of these things. It's sort of a circuitry thing that goes haywire. It's a buildup. There's lots of things that lend itself to that. So there's some interesting, and let's take anorexia for a minute. For men, it's often they're athletes, and that's the instigation. And if you look at the type of athlete, I think that's really interesting because, you know, the basketball team doesn't have a lot of anorexics on the team, but individual sports where their individual performance is ranked, they tend to be more. In fact, let me see if I can find that stat I just lost. But basically, it's much higher in those sports because they're being, you know, for women, it's typically gymnastics, dance, ice skating, ballerinas. You know, it's where their individual performance is and they are being looked at and rated.
Yeah.
Right. And then for men, it's very similar. It's wrestling. It's, oh, shoot. What's the other one? Not tennis.
Would it be
a
dude sport or a dude heavy sport?
It's a dude sport. I had it right here.
Soccer, rugby, basketball, football.
No, any team sports or, you know, sports that are like a ref is reffing the game. They have lower incidence than.
Really? That's interesting. What the heck does that mean?
Well, because you're focused on, like, I'm freaking just gonna find it. I swear I had all these pulled up. I'm so annoyed.
That's crazy to me, though. Like, yeah. Okay, let's say
oh, here we go.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm just gonna read this while you guys are sitting there.
Yeah. That's good audio.
Oh, interesting. Gay men have a higher rate of bulimia and anorexia.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if you think of culturally, like depending on where they're gay or they're experiencing that lifestyle. I mean, if it's in San Francisco or New York or places where I think half the place is anorexic anyway, it might be more so because it's image focused or something, you know. I think like the Midwestern gay guys are not maybe struggling the same way East Coaster is. Or, well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it'd be easy to categorize in various ways, but it's probably consistent with I mean, let's be honest about it. A lot of, not all, obviously, this isn't a blanket statement about every gay person ever, but there sometimes tends to be a kind of a femininity to it, you know?
Right.
I've got a friend of mine named Dale who is flamboyantly gay and loves it. And that guy is having a great time all the time. He is like, what's the beach in Miami Beach on plus 10 all constantly. And part of that is, and part of the reason I really like him is he just feels like the most fun girlfriend I ever had. Just right. This excited, just, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think that trait is common, and therefore maybe some of the cultural trappings of those traits, whether they be body image or, you know, whatever, those pressures right. are still going to be there. And maybe even some of those are the same.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, okay. I found it. So
I say all that, not being a gay dude, I have no idea what that is like. I just want to throw it out there as a possible thing. It's important, right. I think, on podcasts to let people know sometimes this is just conversation. It isn't always us making some sort of blanket statement that of anything.
Just looking at stats, it says 14% of among gay men tend to suffer from bulimia and over 20% anorexia, which is just high.
That seems high. Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems really high to me.
So the athletes, you know, it can often start there. I think sometimes we just think of athletes as, oh, it's performance. It's, you know, they're doing their thing and, you know, but you don't maybe recognize how much pressure on men is that performance is also connected to just their body's ability, right? Mm-hmm. Or their size or their power or whatever. So it's very connected. Whereas like dance for a woman, it's the thinness and how she looks when she really needs strength and muscle tone and food to dance. But if she doesn't look right, she's not going to get the jobs and the parts and the, you know, whatever. And so the hyper focus is on certain elements with both. Okay. So in judge sports, like you get a score, gymnastics, swimming.
Yeah.
That's the one I couldn't think of. The prevalence of eating disorders is 13% compared to 3% in refereed sports.
What is the difference? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, think about it. You're okay. I'm going to put you on a balance beam in your underwear.
All right.
And you're going to flip off and do some crazy stuff. And I'm going to judge you by yourself 0 to 10.
Yeah. Good point.
Now let's put you on a volleyball team and you're going to play a few minutes and maybe be on TV every once in a while, but no one is measuring your waist size or putting you in weird underwear.
Yeah, they're just you're being evaluated on how many points you're scoring or defending or whatever, and it's the rules are being handed out hopefully equally. You know, the ref is calling, right. He's blowing the whistle for both sides. It's not like you're not being singled out necessarily, unless it's bad reffing. Right. And when there is bad reffing, people flip out and refs get fired or coaches get ejected from the game. I mean, like terrible things happen if refs are being seen as to focusing on one player or one team or whatever. I guess right. I could
Whereas
see
the other,
that.
It is all about you alone, your performance.
Yeah. And this isn't to say just there aren't like outliers, Nick, but
you know,
yeah.
Alone.
Yeah. All alone. He was sure. He was sure everybody was looking at him. Every single soul in there. Anyway.
Such a weird experience too. And in the case of these people, some of these elite athletes, it's true. Everyone is looking at them. Okay. So then there are higher rates of eating disorders in elite athletes, 20%, than in the regular control group of 9%.
All right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Then this is the other female athletes in aesthetic sports. That's gymnastics, ballet, figure skating. They have the highest risk for eating disorders of anybody, of any athletes. And then, this is interesting. So the psychological profiles of these athletes with anorexia, there's common factors. And I think this might be true for, and we're talking maybe a group that is constantly working on their bodies, thinking about their physical performance, all of those things. It's also in that age range that is, you know, dangerous. There's not a lot of like professional ballerinas who are 60.
You know? No, not that I'm aware of.
Maybe. Not saying. We don't know. Okay. But the psychological profile, they have these things in common. Perfectionism, high self-expectation, competitiveness, hyperactivity, repetitive exercise routines, compulsiveness, drive, tendency towards depression, body image distortion, and preoccupation with dieting and weight.
Huh.
So that thing, that sort of obsession with weight and numbers, and we're going to talk about solutions here at the end. So don't worry. We're not just going to talk about how it's all scary right. and here are the numbers, but
right.
There are some things to do. But what ends up happening is sort of this obsession with food and body and image. I mean, think about the average consumer of media.
Yeah.
How often are they seeing ideal bodies as opposed to regular sort of frumpy or normal looking people, right? I mean, it's 200 to 1. You
I
know?
Think I
mean,
this is interesting you bring this up. And I actually think it's important to mention here. I think this might be changing for a different generation a little bit, because what we're talking about, what you're illustrating there, is the way we were brought up, the way television and media has worked for so long, where message is controlled by a few and viewed by the many. It is now shifting toward
right.
YouTube and the internet and things where quite often the thing you're into features a frumpy balding dude who's hosting it, or a girl who is not, doesn't fit in the latest bikini fashions or whatever. And it's, and they're becoming superstars for different reasons, not because they're attractive necessarily. I mean, they may not be ugly people per se or whatever that even is. That's also subjective anyway, but the constant, here is your high watermark of female or male body, is less and less a thing. I think I could be wrong about this. May take a weird turn. Maybe the prevalence of porn on the internet is the dark truth of this, and that's where that's being solved. And only this other thing is just whatever's left. I don't know. I mean, a lot of that stuff could be argued and picked apart, but it does seem to me that kids are less interested in looking like a solid gold dancer, like somebody might have been in 1985, and more wish they could play video games like, you know, PewDiePie or one of these YouTube guys. So,
well, you may be predicting the
I
future
so.
Because
I
as far
so.
As our numbers are, it is only gotten worse for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And maybe there is a tipping point, and we are sick of the perfect whatever. And you know, I think of Lena Dunham. Right?
Yeah, Lena Dunham is she's that show on HBO, Girls, I think it's called.
Girls, yeah. And sort of a little bit of a spokesperson for the millennials when it comes to this. Like, I'm not going to, you know, this is my body and this is what it is. And, you know, and it's in the context of some of the work that she does. And so, you know, I think it's probably, you know, it may be a sentiment that's increasing. I know sort of the real beauty stuff. Dove's done a lot of things with this too. Like, look at what we actually do with images. We Photoshop them. And you know, we all know it's Photoshopped. We all know. In fact, there was a, I don't know, it was an ad. I can't think of who it is. You know, my grandma brain. I can't remember squat. Anyway, but it was on, she published it. She's famous, probably a rapper. Not really sure.
Okay.
But she published it, or she had it. It was very, like the ad was about, none of this is touched up. None of this is Photoshop. This is my real shape.
Yeah.
These are the real clothes, you know, and how appealing and refreshing. And I remember looking at the ad, I was in the dentist office. I remember looking at the spread and thinking, yeah, she does look disproportionate a little, like her waist is higher.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that in magazines. You don't see someone not perfectly,
even her sort of, before.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was just this honest look. So I think there's an uptick in that, and it's appealing. And
doesn't
I think
that happen though? It kind of goes up and down. You're going to have hippies in the 60s who never shave their armpits again because, man, we're just natural, man. And then and then it goes the other way, and then it goes back. I mean, I feel like it's a bit of a seesaw. Right. I just feel like there's a big breeze blowing the internet's way that says, well, here we're all exposed for who we are. You can't Photoshop a crappy webcam in some guy's office. You know what I mean? And in a way that, because the medium has broadened, it's made it possible for everybody, not just the pretty people, to make something interesting. And I think that changes.
Right.
Things.
Absolutely. And so I think the more exposure we have to normal looking people, the better. But I also think, and speaking of porn, I think this answers our emailer's penis question. There is, I'm fairly certain, not well endowed male porn stars are not making a lot of those movies, aren't getting the star roles. So if you're a porn watcher, you're going to see unrealistic and again, photoshopped probably, or sort of well-endowed folks who just are naturally freaky or whatever, but you're seeing, you're seeing stuff that is also not realistic in any sense of the word. The, everything you're watching in regards to porn,
yeah,
is its own fantasy made up la-di-da. And so if that's a common thing for you and that's what you're seeing and you're comparing yourself to that woman's in ecstasy because blah, 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 and my girlfriend's sort of like, meh. Then you have an intimacy problem, not a you're not big enough problem. And you got to work on real life stuff. But sometimes we struggle to differentiate that, right? So he says, I've always worried about this thing. Well, he's worried about this thing if maybe it's the gym locker room. Maybe he's looking at too much porn. Or you take anybody who's exposing themselves all the time to, no pun intended, all the time to, you know, ideal body images or perfection and assuming I'm not good enough or feeling that way or beating themselves because they don't fit what they're seeing. That is normal for us to do. When we look around, we are social creatures. We know we're okay because we look around and we see what other people are doing and we check what we're doing. We say, am I in the range of normal? And even those people who think they're so different, like, oh, I know I'm awesome because I'm different from everyone. Except for the 20 guys in the chat room who are just like you. Like, you really aren't that special, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
that's how we determine if we're okay or not, even if it's a subgroup or, we think we're whatever.
Yeah.
That is one way we know we're okay. So we're all doing this.
Yeah.
So one of my solutions is really, I think, really powerful and very difficult to do, but can be very powerful. And that is to significantly cut down on what you view that puts the ideal human body as the norm.
Yeah.
And that may mean, okay, this is going to sound dumb, but just last night, dumb because you think it, I'm 400 years old, but last night I watched the pilot of Breaking Bad. I haven't seen one show.
Oh man, that's your first dip into the Breaking Bad pool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Look how far long ago this is.
Well, it's like 2009. It's not too long, but yeah, you're a little behind.
But
sure,
pretty long.
Sure.
And what's his name? The head guy, the main guy,
Walter White, aka the actor's the dude's brain. I can't think of it now.
Dude. Yeah. And all I could think of was, oh, I get why people like love hate him.
Yeah.
Like he's sympathetic, but you also want to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
Like what? Anyway,
that's his thing. The entire run of that series.
Yeah. And he does it well. Anyway, he's in his underwear at one point. He has no shirt on at one point.
Yeah.
And you could watch that all day and be like, all right, that's what a dude looks like. I'm doing well. But if you're watching bodybuilding shows, if you're watching Miss Teen Blobbity Utah, what do you call it? America.
And Miss America.
You know, you're going to
Miss Teen Blobbity Utah.
I mean, really, like the it's so unrealistic. And if you constantly consume it, it's going to be the norm. It's going to be your comparative group. It's that social comparison thing that we do whether we like it or not. So it's a difficult thing, but for people to really watch the media they consume, not like just hang out with fat people or only watch webcams of gross people talking, you know, but maybe really look at what you're doing. Are you looking at fashion magazines if you're a female? Are you looking at fashion magazines and feeling like crap afterwards?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Sure.
Just stop for a month and see the difference, right?
Well, the problem is, this doesn't feel like there's always this train rolling and you're not on it and you got to get on it. And how do I get on it? Well, I need to look like these people. I got to act like them or I'm never going to get on this train they're on. This is the most amazing train.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, agree with you.
That's regular people too. You can just portray your perfect little life and then everyone can feel like crap too. It's not only just with supermodels.
Oh,
right?
For sure. In fact,
it's,
sometimes
again,
it's
human nature.
Yeah. Sometimes it's worse because Facebook, Instagram or whatever, sometimes those, you know, are that's a place where you can completely control this narrative about you and you can just show only all the amazing things about your life. You know, here I am in a fancy car. Here I am at a fancy restaurant. You're not showing the part where you can't get the raise you need to help pay for your crazy lifestyle and your 80 grand in credit card debt or whatever.
Right.
That's the problem, is that it's all this artifice. So you've swapped one artifice in Vogue magazine for a whole different kind of artifice at Instagram, where your friends are all living fabulous lives that you're not living.
Exactly. And honestly, if someone was posting like their credit card statement and them crying,
yeah,
you would stop following them. Like, we don't want that. Yeah. This is why we've always had celebrities, and we always will.
Yeah.
We need someone bigger than us, right? And we even do it with our dumb little friends that we actually know by thinking their lives are great when we really don't want to hear what it's really about. We don't really want celebrities to be real people. I think that's why when they become mothers and they give advice, you kind of want them to shut up. Like, okay, you and your four nannies don't want to hear how you potty train. Don't want to hear it, right?
Yeah.
Because they're just supposed to look beautiful and not be real people. Or maybe people really like that they're real people, but they really just want the glamorous version of real life. They don't really want to see whatever it is, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's all that.
Right.
Let me get to some other scary statistics, and we'll go back to solutions.
I love scary statistics. Go.
Oh, these are really disturbing. Okay.
Really? Like, why so much? Well, okay, go ahead.
So 47% of girls in 5th to 12th grade report wanting to lose weight because of magazine pictures. So that is half of all girls.
Because of magazine photos?
Magazine pictures. Uh-huh.
When were these stats collected? I'm just curious. Do we know?
Where or what?
When were they collected? Do we know? Like, how old is this data? I'm just curious.
Stats? Just That'll curious. Take me too much energy to figure out.
I'm just trying to I'm trying to picture a lot of modern teens. Again, I'm not a modern teen, so I can't really speak to this. But I don't imagine they're looking at that many magazines anymore.
They're all in the 2000s.
Oh,
yeah, you know they're not, but they're looking at you know, same idea, just different places.
Okay,
right,
fair enough.
And not only are they looking at them now, they're not looking at static images. We also have a significant rise in young girls viewing pornography. So they're also seeing the female body in ridiculous forms with lots of surgery and doing things that, you know, really don't work for women in real life, but work when you're acting.
Sure.
All of that, they're seeing all of that and mimicking that. So, oh, I have a thing to say, but this is like people listening.
Yeah, there are people listening to this. That's okay. What is it? I want to hear. What was it? Yeah.
My friend's a labor and delivery nurse. And she, if anyone has a child in the car, turn this off.
All right. You've been warned. Go.
Yeah. A labor and delivery nurse. And she says, it is 100% obvious when a woman comes in to have a baby who is 35 and younger. And then anyone who's older. Mm. Let's just say porn has a lot to do with how they groom themselves. Because there is a certain look that is absolutely a younger generation sort of thing, and that is the style. Is this obvious enough what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, it's, and so so she loves to talk about that because she thinks it's so funny to tell us and gross us out. But there really is a sort of delineation between, you know, what's in and what's not, and when did anybody know that?
Well, they only knew it. They know it because the trend. Yeah, no. If there's any question whether or not pornography creates trends today in those regards, that they'd be lying. That's totally true. I'm sure it's true.
Right.
And that's true not just for the dude who's this idea that it's all just dudes going, why don't you be more like her or whatever.
No way.
I think it's a lot of girls going, I think this is what guys want me to be.
Right. And maybe this emailer would argue it's a whole lot of women expecting men to be like that, too.
Maybe
that trend has increased. And so the pressure on men to have ideal bodies and ideal junk is all about, you know, the uptick.
The ideal junk would be a great episode name. But
put that on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Ideal junk.
I got ideal junk, baby.
So, you know, everyone listening is like, how did Wendy turn anorexia into pornography conversation? And it's because I can turn everything into a pornography conversation.
Well, you see it in your work as a very common route to the problem, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And we're connected to a lot of various things. And people are always surprised when I'm like, so tell me about your pornography use. And they're like, oh, what? I'm like, okay, listen, you just gave me all sorts of ideas that help me know and that you're doing it. So don't act surprised. I know. Now let's talk about it. And they're always like,
yeah, they hate that, right? Because they don't know that you figured all this crap out by just 10 sentences or whatever, but you have.
Because most people think it has no impact on a person, and it does. It's just like anything has an impact. That has a specific impact, and it leaves a trail, and it's kind of obvious.
So if you, so I have an argument for your what you said there that I just want to throw out there. If you said to me, or if somebody came to me and said, hey, all I do from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. a day is watch old Tom and Jerry cartoons. The world would assume that that would have some impact on that guy's perception of the world around him, or at the very least, what he thinks about all the time. You know, it would be a part of him in a way that is more than if somebody had just seen a cartoon once in their life.
Right.
For people who watch a lot of pornography, the idea that that isn't somehow part of them or informs the rest of their life seems so disingenuous to me that they would even make that stance or that statement. It's just such a... Because it's such a like, well, the establishment can't tell me how to live, you know, whatever, that they take that stance. But then people in like the professional world of therapy and cognitive whatever and all the stuff that you do, you see this every freaking day, right? Like every day somebody's like, yep, porn, 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 porn.
Yeah.
That's
and there's a
how
reason.
Depressing.
There's a reason is that we are wired, created, manufactured, developed, evolved to crave simple sugars and crave sex, because those two things kept us alive, kept our ancestors alive. We're only here because someone related to us way back got some sugar and got some sex, some sugar sex probably. And if without those two things, we would have died. Right. And so it's just it's ingrained in us, but never in the history of the planet have we had unlimited access to simple sugars and unlimited access to sex. Yeah. So you think about the impact on like how we evolve with that. I mean, it's intriguing. I don't know what the answer is or how it's going to look, but one of the responses is binge eating, anorexia, bulimia, obsession with bodies. Mm-hmm. I think that's always there to some extent, but the access to the food to even having eating disorders is a thing.
Yeah,
there's a reason it's on the rise. It's because we have access to food because of various reasons. We now all have food, you know, modern farming and blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story on this show before, but it's a colleague of mine way back in the 60s was in New York, getting his master's degree, and all of the, you know,
wait,
PhD
you're call. Oh no, you weren't in the 60s. You mean him? No, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
You're like a colleague of mine back in the 60s. I'm like, what? You weren't even alive in the 60s.
No, sorry. He was old when we were colleagues.
Got it.
I was very young. He was old, but he was back, you know, he was young at the time. And they gathered all of the students in, you know, the room that has the one-way mirror. And they brought a patient in and they said, you guys need to see this because you may never see it again in your lifetime. And it was a woman with anorexia.
No. Okay.
And they were like, wow. Because it's like seeing something in the wild, because they had known of the diagnosis. They knew it existed. You know, it wasn't officially maybe even a diagnosis at the time, but here you saw someone starving themselves on purpose. Like that type of mental distortions you would have to have to starve yourself to death was not common. And now it's 10% of men and it's 25% of women, you know, whatever the women's statistic is. I actually didn't look that up.
Do you think it's always been that? It's just that the men were less likely to open up about it or even vice versa? Or
I think it's increased. The men's stuff's increased. They may have hidden it. I mean, I think cowboys, I mean, this may sound weird, but cowboys for generations have been anorexic. And like the skinny jeans and the buckle and them riding the horses and the very thin, I know it sounds super weird, but there's a thing. Yeah, anyway, so I wouldn't say it's, you know, non-existent in the past, but I definitely think, you know, now there's more help to be got. And then they're hospitalized, they're dying. And I do think there's an increase in, the prevalence because of body image stuff, muscle stuff, health obsession. I mean, we are health obsessed as, you know, as a nation, I think generally.
Sure.
So there's that.
Well, okay. We are, but we aren't. Cause we've got like still a major obesity problem, which doesn't seem very health focused. And then this
other
thing.
Think about it for a minute. What is the difference between binge eating and starving yourself?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. There's not much difference. There's probably not much difference in terms of the, not the mental state, but you know what I mean? Like the whatever the psychological end goal is for either person is probably about the same. But more what I mean is like, do you think that the extreme focus on health and super fit, you know, one end of the spectrum helps the other side feel like giving up even more?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I think binge eating is on the rise because of the super healthy and the image that everyone else is thin and beautiful and you'll get a job if you're thin. I mean, the reality of how much our culture values thinness is, you know, we could cite a million studies of how that matters, right? And yet, the other side is also, so one way to think about maybe the restrictive not eating version of this is it's about feeling power. So, you know, sort of the stereotypic anorexic girl is very controlling, perfectionist parents, highly, you know, demanding. And the child has only one thing they can control, and that's what goes in and out of their body.
Yeah.
And so anorexia can come out of that. Binge eating is an element of control, kind of comes down to losing control, taking control. People I've met with who have a binge eating issue are miserable when they're doing it. This is not like I'm going to eat 4,000 Doritos and this will be fun. We have a weird cultural context for eating a ton of food sounds awesome. It's like can't stop feeling so sick, and the most depressed. I mean, it's a nightmare. It is hell for them.
Yeah. I do that when I eat a bag of M&Ms. I know. I mean, even that small thing, it's just like, I shouldn't be doing this. Why am I doing this? How come I'm eating these? I feel terrible. This is gross. Why am I still eating these? Like, to take that and
times
I guess,
that by another 8,000 calories.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolute torture and miserable and feels like this endless loop they can't get out of.
Right.
Right. So at its core, there is a mental glitch that occurs. I think people who are susceptible, the way the culture is today, just kind of pushes them towards it when 100 years ago they may not be pushed towards it because of the context of society. There's going to be plenty of people to never go there, right?
Right.
But I think there's probably very few who don't think about their weight or worry about it or think about what they're eating. I mean, I would say that would be a very rare case to find anybody who just doesn't feels awesome about how they look all the time and doesn't care and eats what they want.
It's almost like the entire reason for mirrors to exist. I mean, if you think about it, what else are you doing? There's no other, somebody could say, oh, there's a giant thing of mustard on your face. Well, then a mirror is very practical. Well, thank you. I'll now take that mustard off that I now see. But even then you might look into the mirror and go, oh, stupid mustard. Man, my eyes look baggy. And what's with these crow's feet? And you know what I mean? Like you start to establish or you start to dissect your looks anytime you have a mirror in front of you. And we were at a department store over the weekend. Kim had to try some stuff on and she's standing in front of the mirror, checking it out and stuff. I'm thinking to myself, there's nothing about this that is self-affirming, really.
No.
I
honestly want to call the Gap and be like, why do you guys have that lighting? It is horrifying.
It's really bad.
Do they want you to buy the clothes or do they want you to run out of there and never come back? Because that is the lighting. But maybe it's just generally what it's like to try and close.
Yeah.
This is why I don't shop.
Yeah, right?
I don't shop and I don't look in mirrors. This is why these are my solutions.
You look like shop. It's why one day you'll just look like a hermit with a beard and you'll just, that'll be it.
That'd be great.
That'd be fine.
So let me just say one other thing about young kids and sort of the concern there.
Okay. That's always good because a lot of times I feel like a lot of people are too far gone and the best thing we can do sometimes is just to help our kids go in the right direction. But anyway.
So 42% of first to third grade girls want to be thinner.
All right.
Six, 7 and 8 year olds.
Goodness.
And then 81% of 10 year olds, those are fifth graders, 10 year olds are afraid of being fat. So what have we, and by the way, that study was 1991. I would assume it's higher now. I couldn't find an earlier number with kids. I'm sure there's plenty of them.
You'd think. Because you gotta think how much compounded exposure there has been since 91 in terms of being exposed to the thing you're afraid of. So, yeah, why not?
And then, you know, what do the role of parents play, and what is the, you know, how you talk about it? You know, friends who have daughters, we sort of talk about how do you just live a healthy lifestyle and make healthy choices and shut up about it, because that's what they don't hear. Mom likes herself. They hear mom doesn't like herself and why. And, you know, there's sort of a trickle down impact. So what's interesting that I would love to know about the emailer is, where were his messages from? And I think this is a valuable exercise for anybody who's listening to this and thinking, yeah, I have this tendency. For those who have full blown eating disorders, they're going to need more help than just let me write a list, right? And there are some really good programs and help to be had. I think you have to step out a little bit to get to those. This isn't something that falls in your lap. Like treating depression, your family doctor will be like, you seem sad, here's a pill, you know, which I disagree with, by the way, but at least there's some access to care that's, the barriers are very low. But eating disorder specific treatment is a much bigger step, but it can be very effective. There's really great programs out there. There really is help. So get the help that you need. If you're just sort of the average Joe, sort of pay attention, like just do a week and write down anytime you feel bad about your body or think about your body. I had one client once tell me, take it like a notebook and just tick every time she thought about food.
Mm.
And it was hundreds of times a day.
Wow.
And you think, what? How is that even possible? But when you wake up, when you don't like how you look, you're thinking, I'm not eating today. So you thought about food. You put on your clothes, they're too tight. You think, I'm not eating today. You sit down, you think, how many calories are in this? I mean, so much. And what we did after we kind of figured out how much energy she was giving to food, we calculated that in time.
Yeah.
And then, so what if you had 7 hours of time that you just spent wasted on something that you hate thinking about? What would you do with it? So we, tried to replace that with some other things. She's this beautiful singer. Oh, she's a great person. And it was just like, you give more time to your music. You do the things you love, you put some energy. And that's really what the end result, unfortunately, is of our obsession about health and food and body image, is it just depletes us, right? It just sucks the life we were giving this stupid thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, like food or like sex and food and breathing, it's having a problem with something that you're doing anyway. You have to eat every day.
Yeah.
Or you die. So it's one thing to be addicted to food, or it's one thing to be addicted to cocaine and you can't get it. That sucks, right?
Yeah.
But if you're addicted to food, you still have to eat food.
Yeah, there's no, yeah, you have to.
Right.
Yeah.
So you need a little more help in these categories. It's a serious, significant thing. And if you're a guy and you're listening to this, and you think, well, I don't have a problem with this, and I don't know any dudes who do, maybe just put on the sensitive new age guy hat for a minute and be like, but maybe they do. Maybe you have no idea. Maybe if you went to dinner with 12 of your buddies and took a survey, you would find that a lot of them struggle with this and that you're making it worse by being a bro about it.
Yeah. Well,
or a douchebag.
Or a douchebag, which we talked about off air, but yeah. I don't know. I find it fascinating that you really are talking about, in two of these cases, let's say the sex case and the food case, they're two crucial aspects of human subsistence. One is crucial to you living your life. You can't live without food and water. The other is a thing that we can't propagate the species without. So there is no someone after you if you don't have that end of it. And then having so many disorders or whatever things crop up around those two is interesting. It feels like it's most things, doesn't it? I mean, obviously it's more than that. There's anger issues, but then it always just seems to come back to stuff like that. It's always like something to do with, I don't know, not always food, but oftentimes sex. It just feels like everything's always connected to these two things that have so much to do with human life. And yet,
Give it a Buddhist spin. Mm. It all comes down to desire and wanting, because suffering would be defined as wanting something and not being able to satisfy it, right?
Yeah.
Or needing something and not being able to satisfy it. And so those two things, like other things like relationships or connection or, you know, sort of inner peace, right? Not having huge warfare in your head because there's all these voices and competing for, you know, who can beat you up first and fastest. And, you know, all of those can be sort of tied to this sort of inner suffering that is so universal. There's not one of us that hasn't suffered. There's not one of us who doesn't know discomfort or pain or, you know, and so sort of in that universality, it's not just the starving kids in Somalia or the, you know, that have it rough, even though we are privileged and can get food and get what we need. There's still a feeling of a feeling of deprivation. And that's the trick, right? That's the look around and see that everyone has great stuff and Facebook makes my life look crappy and and everyone's looking at me.
Right.
You know, all those, the ego, it all kind of ties, you know.
Well, I can tell you what, dude. So I know, I mean, obviously his email led to a bigger topic, a more sweeping topic, but I want him to, I think it's important to note that probably like him, I go out of my way in a men's gym. Like we're going today at 4:00. I will go out of my way in that changing room not to look at anybody's junk. I avoid it like it's the plague because I don't want to look there and I don't even want to make eye contact. I just want to get in here, change, and get the hell out of this place. And I think that's how most people are in there. So if that's where you're worried about it, don't worry about it there. If it's worried about, oh, I'll never find a girl who will want to be with me because society has told me that only big units win the day, I don't know what you say to that because it's just not true. Like a real relationship's got little to do with that.
Right.
And I don't know how to say that to him without it sounding like, come on, man, buck up and find a girl, see? Because I realize that's what that sounds like.
See, you find a girl. Yeah, just find her. Do you look at porn? When she says no, you marry her.
Yeah, you grab that girl and run. She doesn't have any idea. But also just, I don't know, maybe it'll help him to know that some of those porn guys are probably total jerks. You know what I mean?
They are such jerks.
They might
be. You
know,
it's interesting being in Europe because, you know, nudity, sexuality is such a different cultural norm here than in the States. We have so much puritanical, you know, heathen freak, not heathen, that's not the right word,
no.
Puritanical,
I know what you're
whatever,
trying to say.
Fervor,
you sure?
Wrapped around it that, you know, creates a thing. And Abe's having this interesting experience. He's in third grade here because they don't have, anyway. It's not like he's repeating a grade, but it's the same number.
I understand,
which
sure.
kind of sucks for him. Yeah. But anyway, they go to the gym and change in front of each other and shower. And that is not happening in the United States, right? Can I get an amen? There are no third graders taking showers together. That is not happening. But this is just the norm that you're around other. And it doesn't start in junior high when you're already a freak, right? It just starts when you're a kid. You just don't even think twice about it. And you see other kids naked and... Or like in Finland, when they do the sauna and it's just everyone together naked in the sauna, girls and boys, they just don't, there's such a different cultural context for some of this that it's just interesting to think about the impact. So Abe hated it at first. He's like, I'm not doing it. I am not showering.
Right.
Cause
he's coming again from that cultural perspective where nobody's naked anytime. Sure.
And he's Mr. Prudy Pants. He's always like, weirdly shutting the bathroom door because that just generally doesn't happen in the house. Mm-hmm. His teacher was like, yeah, you don't have a choice. That's so weird. Your response, like, she just didn't know that context.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? Anyway, so he just did it and he's fine. And now he's like, yeah, it's no big deal.
Well, not only is it puritanical, or not only does that culture exist here, but then haven't we reinforced it by making everyone think that everyone's a molester? And so be aware.
And everyone's a perv, and everyone's...
Yeah, everyone's out to get you. So how in the world could you have a sauna full of kids that aren't clothed? That makes no sense in the context of what people around here have been brought up with. Because what they've been brought up with is it's dirty to be naked. And also there's tons of weirdos running around trying to find you naked.
True. And there's also the nudity means sexuality, as opposed to nudity is sometimes just how you're born, or your towel falls off when you're headed into your room, or, you know, nudity is so charged because it's so not allowed. Right.
Yeah.
So someone may be listening to this and think, oh, wait, they were just bashing on pornography, and now they're saying there should be more nudity. And what I'm saying is our hypersexualized has something to do with deprivation of just normal human bodies being normal parts of life. And I think that it's just interesting, and I'm just noticing it. And, you know, I don't know if I told you this, but when we were moving here, I can't tell you how many dudes, I mean, so many dudes came up to Adam and said, oh, Sweden, the women are just naked there. I mean, literally, like, just sort of going on about how you got to be careful because they'll just answer the door naked. And Adam's like, okay, I don't even know if I should respond to you to give you, I mean, what is wrong with you? A, B, are you sharing your weird Swedish hot porn fetish or what? I like, you're so obvious. Stop talking.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any predisposition for what. I mean, I have this idea that all the Finnish girls are see-through and you can see their hearts beat through their thin skin, and they're like baby fish.
That's totally true.
But that's more based on me just being a jerk. But I don't, you know, the idea that everyone thinks all the French ladies are so good looking and so hot and but don't shave their armpits or a thousand other little things. And you realize that all of it's based on like this weirdly limited scope of what internet porn they've seen.
Yeah, totally right. And I'll tell you what Swedish women are really like. They are very lovely, but they're not done up. There's not a ton of makeup. I haven't seen any breast implants, and I have looked. No, but I mean, really, it's just they're naturally lovely. And, you know, the weather is crappy half the time, so your hair is crap. And you got to wear like raincoats and boots all the time. I mean, there's fantasy and there's real life, but you know, they're all very nice.
That's right. Saying. So don't worry about your wiener. Don't worry about your Swedish ladies. And what else have we learned today? Don't eat. Don't eat too much.
No,
and don't
emails
eat too little.
About you porn, anti-porn people.
I know we get these sometimes where we had a guy create a Twitter account just to yell at me for saying that, pornography is a common problem for a lot of people. That was the simple statement. Yeah, and he was just awesome. Was not having any of that. And then he went away. His Twitter account.
And then he went away.
Well, there you go. I think that'll help a bunch of folks. Two episodes left, everybody. Not sure what next week is, but don't worry. It'll be something good. And you'll learn something, we think, from that episode. So be looking forward to that. Wendy, always a pleasure. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody else for listening. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, want to check out the archives of the show, you want to subscribe to the feeds and all that stuff, you can find all of it at frogpants.com/therapy. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.